When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Factor. If you want to eat better this year and are looking for fast, healthy, restaurant-quality meals that are ready to eat and easy on your budget, Factor is the perfect solution. Sign and save right now by going to factormeals.com/talktv50 and use code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/talktv50 to get 50% off.
Hi, this is George Stevens, Jr. You're listening to TV Confidential with Ed Robertson, who's such a great interviewer.
Well, I thank you very much.
Ed Robertson, with a reminder that Lee Goldberg will join us later on this hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Chuck Carter is with us, along with our guest, Simon Napier Bell. Simon's with us via Zoom. Simon Napier Bell, legendary record producer, music manager, author, journalist, entrepreneur, documentary filmmaker, and raconteur. Simon's books on the music industry include Black Vinyl, White Powder, Sour Mouth, Sweet Bottom, I'm Coming to Take You to Lunch, and the book we've been talking about over the past few minutes, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. All of Simon's books available Amazon.com, other online retailers. Simon also writes a Substack column that you can enjoy for free at Substack.com/@SimonNapierBell. Earlier you mentioned the Ad Lib, which is one of the clubs, the nightclubs where a lot of music yep. deals and yep. another happening place in the mid 60s was a place called the Scotch of St. James. Do I have the name right?
Yeah. Well, they moved along. You know, Ad Lib was the forerunner, and then everyone moved to the Scotch of St. James, and the Ad Lib Club burned down. People say the Ad Lib Club burned down so it moved to the Scotch of St. James. That isn't true. They moved to the Scotch of St. James, so the owner burned the club down, so it got insurance based on its success before they moved. Well, I think so. Long time ago, I'm not going to get sued. Scotch of St. James is a wonderful club too. That was a different type of club, and a very exclusive part of Mayfair in a little private square. You know, these clubs were so amazing because they only held about 200 or 300 people. It's like when you go to a big club now and there's a VIP room, and these clubs were the size of that VIP room. Mm. So there'd be no one at all inside there who wasn't a famous face or a higher person in the music or film industry. I went back there a few years ago to film an interview about something, and I was astonished how small it was. I mean, they're really, really small places. Yeah. But that was probably the club I went to most, was the most elite club at all in the 60s. That, too, gave way to another one a bit later. But they had it about 4 years, and it was at its peak. It was fantastic. And, you know, the Beatles would be there every night, and the Stones would be there every night. I mean, every night. You know, some stage of the night, wherever they were, unless they were playing outside of the country, they'd be there. And it was that sort of place.
Yeah, you have a number of Beatles stories weaving through the pages of You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. There's a throwaway line about John Lennon when you talk about the Scotch at St. James.
Yeah, that was there at that club, yeah. Oh, well, you know, we did drink a lot in those days. the idea was to see how much you could drink and then see if you could drink the same amount again. When you could drink no more, then you would see if you could drink the same amount again. I think young people do that today too.
They do.
Or maybe they don't. They're so boring today. Nobody knows.
Extremely boring. Generation Z.
there was one night. I went and sat in the small area, which is for dining with tables and chairs, and I was sitting there very, very drunk, about 3 a.m. I just slipped off my chair onto the floor. And it was rather comfortable and nice, so I thought I'd lie here for a bit. So I was lying there under the table with amongst people's legs and chair legs and people's legs. And then I opened my eyes and I saw crawling towards me under all, in this forest of legs, I saw John Lennon crawling on all fours towards me. So I said, oh, hello, John. Well, you know, what are you up to? And he said, oh, I'm looking for my mind.
But did he ever find it?
No, he was in the same state as I was. I'm sure he found it and went home with it later.
Yeah, but said you don't have to say you love me.
One of the groups, I don't know whether they performed there or whether they just hung out there, but one of the groups you mentioned that was part of the scene at the Scotch at St. James was the Moody Blues. Was this the time when Denny Lane was the front man, or is that where he left?
Denny Lane, yeah. Yeah, they'd have been there. Not necessarily all of them. I don't remember, but I don't even think I knew all of them. But Denny would be there always every night.
We just lost him not too long ago.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even in rock groups, there are always one or two people who didn't go out to these places.
Yeah.
So I never got to know that. I only knew the places people went out. You know, if you weren't a clubber, how can a manager know another artist? Managers don't usually get to know artists apart from their own artists.
Yeah.
Unless you meet them drunk in clubs like this. There's nowhere else you come across each other. backstage at Live Aid and things. But, you know, mostly you don't meet other people.
Yeah.
Except at these sort of places. And, you know, I met and got on with a lot of artists in clubs like that who became friends or very friendly, were quite different from artists you manage. Because the thing about management is, It's not a friendly relationship. Of course, it's friendly, but it's not the relationship of being a friend.
Right.
It's a professional relationship. You've got a job to do.
Well, it goes back to you're the bodyguard of their work.
I mean, you're not talked to by them like a friend. You're talked to either with respect because they think you do a good job, or sometimes quite demeaningly because they think, you know, your job is to get the tea. But whatever it is, it's not like a friend.
Yeah.
Even though they're friendly. I mean, the group Japan I managed, I think I probably had dinner with them 300 times in a year. I mean, we couldn't have been more friendly. But you're still a manager.
Mm.
And when I stopped managing them, I stopped seeing them. I didn't think, because there was nothing to talk about. Because all you've done every night is talk about their career and what you're doing and what they want. And artists, as you know, are very self-obsessed. And if you're not talking about that, they're not interested to talk to you. And if you're not managing them, that's not a very interesting thing to talk about. And so, however friendly you are, you don't see them in that light. But when you meet them, and you'll also find that the artist who you had so much to talk about for 2, 3, 4 years, so much you could have dinner every night, when you're not managing them, there's not much to talk about, and you didn't understand that all they were interested in was model trains or, I mean, some rubbish which you don't want to talk about. Sorry, Rod. And, you know, it's a strange thing. You know, I stopped managing George, and George was somebody who's absolutely fascinating and interesting about every subject in the world. And I didn't see him for quite a while. Now, I met him, you know, a year later or something, when he was already at the peak of the Faith Tour. And he came across in a restaurant, said hello, and he's talked. And he was like a completely different person. You know, this was George all his friends knew. So he's talking to me now as a friend because I'm no longer managing.
Yeah.
None of the mistrust or, you know, what are you doing for us? Could you get this wrong? Or not allowed to get it wrong. It was extraordinary. And this is a person who was, you know, he wasn't going to be boring. He was not a boring person ever. He had a viewpoint and everything, knew what was going on in the world. And so meeting George a year after I stopped managing him and talking to him was absolute revelation. Fantastic person I saw in a completely different light. But some other artists I've met later, and you can't believe you've ever spent more than a day with them. I mean, God, they're so boring. And then there's artists who I never managed, like Bill Wyman. Somehow used to bump into regularly in places like Scottish St. James.
Mm.
And, you know, we just would meet and talk instantly, and that's it. We both, who we wanted to be with, and chat, you know.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. One more item if you're like me and want to eat better this year. Our friends at Factor have more than 35 inexpensive, pre-prepared, ready-to-heat and ready-to-eat, chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved meals that will make eating better every day fun and delicious, and your weekly meal planning a whole lot easier with no prepping, no cooking, and no cleanup necessary. Check it out yourself by going to factormeals.com/talk.
TV50. If you go to factormeals.com/talktv50, you'll find more than 35 different options a week to choose from that are ready to eat and, best of all, less expensive than takeout. Sign and save right now by going to factormeals.com/talktv50 and use code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. Factormeals.com/talktv50. Use promo code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/talktv50 to get 50% off.
Hi, this is Melissa Manchester, and you lucky people are listening to TV Confidential.
Simon Napier Bell is with us via Zoom. Simon Napier Bell, legendary record producer, music manager, author, journalist, entrepreneur, documentary filmmaker, and raconteur. Simon's books on the music industry include Black Vinyl, White Powder, Sour Mouth, Sweet Bottom, I'm Coming to Take You to Lunch, and You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. All of Simon's books available Amazon.com, other online retailers. Simon also writes a Substack column that you can enjoy for free at Substack.com/@SimonNapierBell. You're always posting to your Substack. Do you have a new book or a new film that you're least able to tease our audience with?
Right now, this minute, I'm working on more films than I've ever worked on at one time.
That's good.
Three films, you know, when you work on films, you have to be working on 10 or 12 films to have one come off.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lowest number of, the less films come off than pop stars. I mean, you know, it's really the toughest, yeah, lowest percentage. I've got a film, Orion Williams, who's produced several very big films. He produced the one about Joy Division. And I bumped into him in LA a few weeks ago and what are you working on? He actually was working on a film. And I said, what have you got coming up? He said, here's the notebook. There are 118 projects. And these weren't just idle things. All of them were at some stage of development.
Yeah.
And he said, only four or five will ever happen. You have to have that money going.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I had 10 or 12 I was working on, and three have come up at once, or three actually happening, which is quite, that's really remarkable. But I don't want to talk about them yet, because then they won't happen.
Okay, well, then we will have to invite you back on later on in the year, and we could talk about...
Well, there's going to be a new book. I am going to start, I don't know when, in between these films, on a new book, and the new book will be totally... You know, the last book I did, Sour Mouth, Sweet Bottom, was very much about my own life. Well, it's... Look, I'm in the music business, so half of the book, at least, is music business.
Right.
But half of it isn't. But the new book will be entirely music business. I just wanted to rewrite that, so I was sort of... That's just fun stories about my life, which are not music, which
right.
I want to write.
Right.
But the new book will be entirely about the industry in a way I haven't really talked about it before, which really makes it clear for everybody how it works and how it functions and what it is.
Fantastic.
And what sort of people are in it and what sort of people. It's very interesting what you might define as the music industry. I sort of define... There's two things. The music industry, you know, the music industry is not about musicians who have gigs and jobs and get, you know, $500 a week for playing in clubs and things. I mean, that's, the music industry is about hit artists and hit songs and nothing else. It's, you know, 99% of all the money, the $60 billion a year they make, is about a very small number of hit artists and hit songs. And it's a corporate industry with a system for making money. It's an extraordinary industry because... You know, what isn't a hit is totally luck. And from a luck-based business, they've built a vast $60 billion a year industry. It's like building a skyscraper on quicksand. It's an incredibly clever thing to do. But they have system, and that system is what makes them so bureaucratic and difficult to deal with and dull, because when you present something which doesn't fit the system, they're... You know, if you have a system on the horses, it's very... I've got friends who make money. That's what they do. They mm-hmm. gamble on horses. Mm-hmm. They don't gamble. They have a system.
Right.
It's very boring. You put quite small amounts of money on consistently. You take quite small prize money. Overall, it makes enough. You live on it. That's your life. And some days, they get tempted to gamble.
Yeah.
You know, to go to break the system. They lose money every time. And everyone knows that. If you have a system, you stick to the system. And it's not exciting. It's a way of making money. And that's what the industry's like. And so when people go to them and go to record, they get frustrated and say, you know, they don't see it, they won't do it. It's because if it doesn't fit their system, they put the industry at risk, because those four major companies, which really control everything now,
right.
70% of the entire music industry, we know it, is four major companies who now own all the publishing companies too. They have a system, and if they go away from that system, they're in danger of, you know, of losing money. And we need them to make money. It's not bad that the money is the primary sort of thing, because it's making money, which that finances the whole industry. And then you have the outsiders, which are the unsigned artists and the managers. And that's, you know, a successful songwriter becomes part of the industry, a successful artist becomes part of the industry, the corporate industry. Talking about managers stay outside always. They never become part of the corporate industry. They can't. They can't negotiate with it if they're part of it. So managers are quite unique, and that's the tone of this next book.
Right.
We will look forward to that. A question popped in my head when you're talking about people who make money off races, they're not gamblers. That reminds me of something I learned when I wrote my book on James Garner and Maverick, because he played Brett Maverick, who was quote-unquote a Western gambler. But Maverick never called himself a gambler because he relied on probability, which goes back to what you...
It's very boring.
It is.
You know, I'll tell you, the easiest system in the world, and it will work, I mean, you've got the finance to do it, is... only to take three major race courses or race meetings or horse racing, right? Okay. And take three major horse racing events, only back favorites, and double your stake every time. You cannot lose.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a lot down. You can, a lot of money will go down, but you keep doing it, you'll come back and you'll make money. And then you start there and you polish it. You say, only back favorites. You know, only back courses which are 2-1, and you refine it, and you refine it, and you refine it, and you actually find you can make quite a good living. But don't go away from that system, because you'll lose. You become a gambler. You'll lose your money. And that's how the major corporations over 200 years have developed a system in the industry which works, and they can make money and turn this thing which is based on luck into a big $60 billion a year solid industry. So you can buy and sell shares and go public. But don't think they're going to bend to your crazy ideas. They can't. They can't.
Yeah.
That's for managers and for aspiring artists. And once the artists break and get in the industry, they become a solid part of it.
Right. They do.
They continue being who they are, almost without deference to the industry. People like Elton John, actually Taylor Swift has done it at 30. It's amazing. But you get to a point where you're using the industry. They're no longer able to tell you how to do things. You're just using them. You don't really need them, but they're there, they function, so you use them. You know, the Stones do that. Elton does, a few major artists. Very difficult, though, to get to that point where you're above the industry. 70% of the entire thing we call the music industry is involved with those corporations, which probably includes William Morris, the CAA, and the collection societies. The other 30% is where all the creativity comes from. But we need that 70% running. They're the government.
Absolutely.
They're the music industry government.
Yes.
And if you want to join the civil service, do, but it's a boring life.
Very boring life. I have one last question, and thank you. This has been fun to speak with you. There's a few clips on YouTube from a documentary done on you, I think in 1966, where you come out and throw the sweater in the car.
Oh, yeah, that's my lovely car. I spent $12,000.
Does that whole segment with you exist? Because there's only like two brief clips. Do you have the whole
film thing? Exists. Yeah, the whole film exists. It was a documentary made, I mentioned it in my book, by ATV, owned by Dick Clark. Dick Clark sold his... Oh, BMG got it now. BMG would be the owners. It'd be in a BMG vault somewhere.
Okay, because there were two other people and you were the third one. And
Four people.
Four.
David Campbell is the film director. There was a fashion designer, an art gallery owner.
And you.
Yeah.
Well, the clips look fascinating. Hopefully that will surface at some point. Thank you. It's been fun.
And we will look forward to your next book later in the year.
No, next year.
Okay,
I'm going to make these films first.
Okay, sometime between today and next year, we'll have you back. Hopefully you'll have a film out. We'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Another film out, yeah.
Excellent. All right. All of Simon's books available Amazon.com, other online retailers. Simon also writes a Substack column that you can enjoy for free at substack.com/@SimonNapierBell. The Real George Michael, available streaming on demand, Amazon.com. Simon Napier Bell, thank you again for joining us today.
Real pleasure. Really fun.
Like, cheers, to, mate.
Great way to wake up.
Good morning, mate. Rise and shine. Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye, mate.
Lee Goldberg will join us when we come back on TV Confidential. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or @tvconfidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.